I had been assigned to guard duty at the naval prison at Parris Island, South Carolina, along with 16 others out of boot camp at the Marine Barracks there in October 1917. This prison was for naval and marine court-martial prisoners and housed a maximum of about 300 prisoners, and the boy I lost was one of these. We were on guard duty in and around the prison for a few months and then advanced to prison chasers, which consisted of guarding a gang of 3 to 5 prisoners on work details. The prisoners worked 6 days a week and on Sunday mornings were taken out for a few hours' work. Any of us guards who were not on post were to stand by to take a gang of prisoners out on Sunday morning if needed. One Sunday morning in December, we were waiting with loaded gats for the prisoners to march out for work details. Now, the weather had been very mild until this Sunday morning when a cold wind was coming down the coast from the northeast, seemingly from Iceland. The prisoners lined up in 2 rows and waited as the assistant warden, Sergeant McCrae, called out the names for the different gangs, several being sent to the police sergeant. The police sergeant was in charge of all work details around the main barracks, such as sweeping the streets with push brooms, and he was at old number 11 building. This was a large brick building where supplies were stored, with a large door in one end where trucks could back in to be loaded. Finally, after calling out 5 names, none of which I remember, Sergeant McCrae turned to me and said, "Here, Delmarter, take this gang to the police sergeant." I stepped behind this gang 5 paces, according to regulations, and said, "Forward march." And we headed for number 11 building, about a block away. When we got there, we lost no time getting inside out of the cold, and my 5 prisoners mingled with about 50 others and several sentries. Most of these sentries had their regular gangs and knew their men by name as well as by looks, but not me. "You see, Bud, here I was, a green prison guard, fresh out of boot camp, responsible for 5 prisoners, none of them with a name, as far as I knew. I was sure that they each had a name, had a face, but I had no idea what it looked like. I did have some advantage, however, as I had a good look at their backs as they marched across the old parade ground to number 11 building. Therefore, I could give a good description of how they were dressed. Number 1 was dressed in a gray prison uniform. Number 2 was dressed in a gray prison uniform. Number 3, let's see. Oh yes, he was dressed in a gray prison uniform. Number 4 and 5, well, come to think of it, they were also dressed in gray prison uniforms. Shortly the police sergeant began detailing the gangs to different duties, one gang being sent to the head. "Now, Bud, you being an old Navy man know what the head is, but for the benefit of others, the head was a large building containing the showers and toilets for the main barracks." A little later, the police sergeant said to me, "Take your gang to the head." I called for my gang to step outside, and 4 of them did. It seems the 5th one didn't know any more about what I looked like than I did about what he looked like. Therefore, didn't know which sentry he belonged with. I said, "Where's the other man in this gang?" But got no reply. I called again, and still no reply. The 4 standing in that cold wind were more interested in getting inside out of the cold than knowing where the other one was. It didn't seem to matter to them. They suggested that he might be with the other gang that had gone to the head. So I marched them over there and asked the other sentry, Kennard, from Illinois, and a seasoned prison guard if he had an extra man. After a quick count, we found that one was still missing. About this time, I began to worry in high gear. You see, I was not responsible to the parents of the little girl, but rather to my tough uncle, or his representative for a lost prisoner. The other sentry eased my feelings a little by saying this prisoner would probably get in with another gang and would be accounted for when the gang was turned in. There was a blackboard at the prison door where the sentry on duty kept score of the number in and out at all times. The total of these should always equal the total number of prisoners. About 11 o'clock, after they had completed their work, we turned the two gangs in together. So far, so good, but I still had a gnawing feeling about where that prisoner was and whether he would be accounted for. The sentries ate at the prison mess hall, and as I went to chow at noon, I took a look at the blackboard. As near as I could make out, it balanced all right, which eased my feelings during the afternoon. We were quartered in tents a short distance from the prison. These tents were about 10 feet square and two of us to a tent. My bunkie was in the sick bay with the measles at the time, so I was in my tent alone with a flask tied shut and the oil stove going full blast. When about 7 o'clock that evening, I recognized Sergeant McRae's voice as he came up the streets and said, in an excited tone, "They were all there this morning." He didn't have to repeat it for me to know what he had said and exactly what it meant. I knew that I had let a prisoner escape, and more than that, he was still unaccounted for. I knew this would mean a court-martial, which would mean that I would likely soon be wearing a gray prison uniform. Now, as well as worrying in high gear, I started to pace the floor, what little floor there was between the two bunks, and wonder what to do. Realizing the seriousness of this, I decided to give myself up, hoping this might ease my guilt a little, but I found this hard to do, so I kept pacing the floor and thinking and wondering, should I or shouldn't I? Kept racing through my mind. Let's wait a while and see what happens. I would stop and listen every few seconds, straining to catch every word that might be said. Then I would pace the floor again and hear that same record, should I or shouldn't I? This was repeated many times in the next few minutes, which seemed like hours. Even though I listened, I heard very little and nothing about a prisoner being missing. After those fateful words, "They were all there this morning." Why? Now and then I would open the tent flap a crack and peek out to see what was going on. Everything seemed calm. Very few were stirring and no excitement. Why? What was happening? After perhaps a half hour of pacing, wondering, worrying, and listening, I could still hear that record. Should I or shouldn't I? But it was slowing down some now. I finally quit pacing the floor, but continued to worry and wonder. Have they found him? Will it be known who let him escape? Will I be up for a court-martial? By this time, I was willing to wait and see, rather than give myself up. In time, I rolled in my bunk and finally went to sleep. The next day, as curious as I was, I thought it best to make no inquiry about the prisoner that I let escape. But I still wonder if he was turned in, and the greater mystery, what was meant when Sergeant McRae said they were all there this morning. Even though this happened over 47 years ago, a chill seems to creep over me every time I think how close I came to wearing a gray prison uniform and being followed by a man with a gun.